When begins the eternal learning curve? The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money, work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 132. This week, we feature vintner and ace ukulele player Judd Finkelstein of Judd's Hill in Napa Valley.
Judd Finkelstein of Judd's Hill Winery is one of the most visible winemakers in Napa Valley. When he's not serenading visitors with his ukulele, nor making wine, or making music in general, he's telling great stories of Napa Valley, and always with a laugh and a smile. We were happy to sit down with Judd at the winery and get a small peek into his world. Fresh from harvest, 2014.
I'm exhausted.
Why? What have you been doing?
You know, making wine. Here we are.
Well, anybody can make wine. Like, that's easy.
Sure it is. That's what, you know, we just sit around nibbling cheese all day out on the veranda watching the grapes grow. It's what we do. Well, it's the middle, it's a little past the middle of October now, but usually we're just getting cranking, you know, with Cabernet and whatnot at this point. But this was an early year, 2014. So we're all done. So right now, you here can smell this, and it smells wonderful, but it's all the last fermentations are wrapping up. We're doing a lot of pressing today and just tidying things up from 2014. I just, you know, work. So I'm a little pooped, but yeah, I'm going to rally for this interview. I'm glad to see you. I mean, otherwise I'm fabulous. Things are great. You know, business is good. The wine is great. 2014 was a delightful year to work with the grapes. Nothing to complain about.
No.
Just exhausted by now.
I should tell our listeners that we are here with Judd Finkelstein of Judd's Hill Winery in Napa, right on the Silverado Trail.
Yeah.
And we've been wanting to sit and chat for a long time, and we have, so here he is.
We have. We've spoken briefly and done little snippets at all the wonderful events you're always at here in Napa Valley. Don't mind that sound. That's mice above us, yeah.
Very assertive mice.
Home to fine wines and humongous mice here at Judd's Hill. Now, we're in our tasting room right now, which also happens to be under a storage balcony. And since we're running press loads, guys are running up and getting, I don't know, stuff, equipment that's up there.
That's okay. Again, it's a working winery.
Yeah.
If it were quiet, then we might say, what's not going on around here?
It's too quiet.
Yeah, well, we don't ever want that. Well, the big thing I want to talk about with you, other than talking about 2014, which we'll get to in a minute, is your history. And I want you to kind of walk me through how you became a winemaker, an owner, and a little of your lineage, if you would, please.
Okie dokie. Let's see where to start. Well, I guess we better head back to about the time I was born, maybe a little bit before. I give credit to my parents. You know, I guess What am I talking about? I see, I'm tired. I told you. I can't think straight. Okay. I am. Let's stick with the facts. Let's not... there's no conjecture here. I'm not guessing. I am a second-generation vintner. Winemaker. Wine person. Whatever the terminology you like on Life Between the Vines, you know, you can insert what you like.
Okay.
Yeah. My folks got into wine probably just before I was born. I hadn't really been into it before. My father was from a small town in Illinois. There really wasn't wine. My mom was from Los Angeles, but I don't know that she didn't really grow up drinking wine. But a little bit before I was born, my father's brother, my uncle, and his wife, my aunt, everyone was living in Los Angeles, and they took a little road trip up to Napa Valley. And loved it. I mean, what's not to love about Napa Valley? And this must have been the late 60s, maybe 1970-ish, somewhere right about there. Fell in love. I mean, it was a beautiful place. It was really quite a bit sleepier back then. And my folks, kind of folks like sort of a, you know, they appreciate urban lifestyle and always enjoyed visiting cities, but I think they really liked the slower pace, more down to earth. My father was very hands-on, and my mother too. I mean, they're both artists, ceramicists. My dad, carpentry. He's an architect, graduated from USC in 1960-something, 66 or so. Anyway, had a great aesthetic about him and loved the creative aspect of the winemaking. So upon returning to Los Angeles, decided, you know, this is going to be my next hobby, and converted the garage at the house in this canyon in West Los Angeles, Benedict Canyon, in fact, into a little winery. So my first memories of having a garage, there's never a car in there. I mean, why would you put a car in a garage when you could put a hand-cranked press and a Stemmer crusher, and there were
makes sense to me.
Extra refrigerators with, you know, bubbling things in them, and I just thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, and they started making fruit wine, I think, and some grape wine that was being, or grapes, they were getting sourced from a home winemaking club out in, and, you know, I hate to do this.
No, oh, do you need to take it? Go ahead.
It's not that, it's just I've got a, it's a plumber. You can use this if you want. This is very interesting to
sure,
listen.
Go ahead.
I just got a phone call, and I have a plumber coming in about 40 minutes, and I just saw you call, but didn't leave a message, so I'm not going to.
This is once again the romance,
yeah,
of the romance of the wine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting around for a plumber. I just got done cleaning the bathrooms. The bathrooms we're very proud of here at Judd's Hill. The color choice and the grout down to the cleanliness.
I'll be stopping by to take a look before I leave.
Take a look? Yes, exactly. Okay. So yeah, started making wine, the family, in the garage in rural West Los Angeles. Actually, better than West Los Angeles. And I'm being very classist right now because our address actually was in 90210 Beverly Hills. This was Benedict Canyon, which is a canyon between Beverly Hills and Sherman Oaks in the valley. But you would never think really Beverly Hills. You'd think more Beverly Hillbillies. It was very rural. And I'm not kidding about this. There were coyotes. There were rattlesnakes. We had a chicken coop. We had chickens running around the yard. It was not what you think of when you think of the 90210. But that's where it got going. And my dad and uncle were, you know, making the wine and getting the families were getting into the wine lifestyle, seeking out wines to try, and you know, showing up at Trader Joe's when they opened up, and you know, when they get a new shipment of something in from wherever, whether Napa, France, and Germany, just enjoying wines. And you know, came to a realization that, wow, you know, my father was a practicing architect, my uncle was a surgeon, they were both doing well in their careers, but they caught the bug. And back in the mid-70s, you could kind of entertain the dream of heading up to Napa Valley and starting something without coming from some other fortune, you know, which is really important because we didn't really come from some other fortune. But back then, it was more approachable. So they were able to buy some property on the corner of Whitehall Lane and Highway 29 between Rutherford and St. Helena and built Whitehall Lane Winery. And my father was the architect of that building, and my uncle became the head of sales, and my dad was the winemaker. And everybody worked. I mean, I was the one that fit into the hatch of a tank. So, you know, here I am at 9, 10 years old, and they're thrusting me into a tank. And there's a picture on one of the wine magazines back then that was a photographer during harvest, and it showed up on the cover. I'm trying to remember which one it was. But and it was just me, my little 10-year-old head poking out with a, you know, rain slicker on and a long-handled scrub brush.
Was that just before the government lawsuit?
That would have come after they discovered that I was working the tasting bar at 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. They'd put a case of wine down just so I could stand up and see over the bar. Yeah. But I really did. I mean, everybody worked. It was a family business. It was basically a startup, and everybody had to pitch in. That's where it started, and it evolved to where we are now, where after several years at Whitehall Lane Winery, my uncle found himself on the road all the time. My father, you know, was finding himself more in an office as a general manager more than a winemaker. And they kind of looked at each other and said, yeah, we've got a good business here. But, I mean, this is not why we got into the business. This is not fun. And, you know, Ray, you kind of know our family a little bit. And for those who are listening, if you come visit Judd's Hill, it should become apparent really quickly that if fun ain't in the formula, it's not something I'm interested in. And that just, I think that's genetic, because that's how the family was feeling as well. So basically sold White Hall Lane Winery. My uncle's side of the family got out of the wine biz, and my folks started Judd's Hill, up on a very steep terraced hillside in the eastern hills of St. Helena Con Valley. And my dad had designed this tiny little house with a teeny tiny little winery on this steep hill, and he couldn't even operate a forklift on, but because he was a good designer, he kind of rigged up these contraptions like Rube Goldberg to get a bin of grapes off of a truck, and it went over a hoist and then on a thing that slid, and it tipped because this wood thing came out. I mean, it was just, I don't know how I thought of it, but it worked, and it was a beautiful place.
Was your dad Judd as well?
Oh, where did the name come from? Yeah, as I'm sure you're getting that. Yeah. No, his name was Art. And
definitely not the same as,
No, and you know, I think, they never admitted to this, but I think what it was is that since I'd grown up in the wine business and around wine, I just wasn't really showing much interest as a teenager. So it was right about the time I was heading off to college is when Judd's Hill was getting started. And so I think it was their maybe not so subtle but indirect pressure to exactly loop me in, raising, making the rope in gesture. You did mime in a past life, I see. That was good. Oh, there, stuck in a box. Yeah. Good, yeah. So, they put my name on it, and that's how that came about. And it was on a very steep hill, and we built where we're sitting now at the south end of Silverado Trail and moved down from Con Valley as a way to expand, not necessarily the wines we make for Judd's Hill. That's still around 3,000 cases a year, which it has been for years and years. Actually, what's interesting, I think, is that we make less of the wines that we always had made, but we make more variety now that we have a tasting room. Mm-hmm. We got to keep people interested, and me interested also as a winemaker. It's fun to try all kinds of stuff. But it was a way to expand our custom winemaking. We do quite a bit of small lot, single barrel, mm-hmm. up to maybe 5 or 6 barrel custom lots of wine for folks. Either vineyard owners can call us and we'll make wine from their grapes, or anybody. I mean, really, anybody listening can give us a ring and say, hi, Judd, I'd like to make a barrel of Napa Cabernet. Can you get me some good Oakville fruit and put it in a brand new French barrel or American barrel? Yes, I can. That's what we do.
Everything is done right here, then, at this location.
Everything's here. Yeah, and we have a tasting room now, too, which we never did up on the hill. Mm-hmm. It was my parents' house, and there's a privacy issue there. So,
right.
Yeah, so folks could come visit us, but they had to call. The number was on the back of the wine label, and so we might only see, 2 or 3 groups of people a week. They'd come to our house, sit down in the my folks' personal wine cellar, and one of us or all of us would sit down with them and taste wine, talk wine, and it was good. It wasn't just run-of-the-mill tasting belly up to the bar. Like, we actually got to know the people who were enjoying our wines and made countless friends that we're still in contact with today. I got married at the home of some people we met that way. They had our wine at a restaurant in St. Helena, had never heard of us, ordered a second bottle, they loved it, and then called up, visited, and we just got to be great family friends. So the tasting room where we are sitting right now is kind of like a recreation. I wanted it to feel like it felt up there, where you're coming into somebody's home, you sit down at this long table where we're sitting right now, and you hang out for a little bit. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a huge commitment. You can, you're in and out in 30 minutes, 40 minutes, but somebody sits down with you, and you get to chat about the wines and who we are and what's going on. And maybe you as the visitor, we get to find out what you're into and what kind of wines, what you like to do while you're here in Napa. And it's fun. You have a conversation.
That's what it's all about. It's interesting, too, because when you enter wine country from the south, especially on Silverado Trail, you're basically kind of number one. The first sign you see, maybe not exactly number one,
but we are the first winery. If you're coming from Trancas, which is the northernmost east-west street in the city of Napa, and you start your adventure heading north on Silverado Trail, we will be the first winery you come to. It's more a mile up on the right as you're heading north, so on the east side.
And we're going to come back and talk about visiting here in just a minute, but just that's something really worth remembering, because I like how you say that. When you start your adventure, it's exactly what it is. You meet different people. The whole experience of visiting is just as much fun for the winemakers when you get right down to it, because you said you make these friends.
I think so. Where I'm coming from is, we talk about the romance of the wine industry and being a little facetious about it. It's great. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love I love it. I love being able to drink wine and eat good food and live in a beautiful place, of course, but it's a lot of hard work. Oh my goodness. Yeah. My inner dialogue during that long pause is like, do I start down this road or not? And I'm not. I'm just going to say it's long hours. It's exhausting. It's manual labor. It's physically and mentally challenging year round. It's running a business.
Well, right, and you're the owner, and
So I never have a day off, really. Even if I'm out of town, right. I'm never really having a day off. But the big payoff to me is not necessarily monetarily. I mean, of course, I got to make a living and send my kids to college and all that. But is getting to meet the people who are enjoying our wine. To me, that is the soul satisfaction. S-O-U-L. You know, it satisfies my soul. When I'm in here and people are sipping the wine and they're smiling and we're having a good time around it, and you know, of course they're complimenting it because I'm a sensitive person, you know, I want to make sure they're enjoying. But to me, that's it. That's what it's all about, is like making this wonderful thing that people will enjoy and brings them happiness. That's cool.
And again, another face, just watching you talk about that, you know, it gets across to people because it's got your name on it. It's your name. It's your pride. You'd mentioned kids, and we've never talked. Do you have kids?
I do have kids.
Are they little kids? Because you're a younger guy, or are they bigger kids?
They're littleish.
Okay. Do you have that hope that they'll carry on the family business? Because it would be third generation.
It would be third. And I guess I'm taking my folks' attitude. I guess I get it from them. You know, they're still pretty young. They're not even near career. I mean, one of them wants to work at Disneyland. Okay, so you can kind of see where they are in their career choices right now. You know, whatever makes them happy. Honestly, at this stage in my life, I guess it's easy for me to say that because they're so young, and we'll see how, you know, what paths life takes them down. But I can't see myself being that kind of parent that would pressure a person to do something that person really doesn't want to do. So if so, great. Hopefully they'll be prepared for all of the challenges that comes with being in the wine business. And we'll just have to see. I can't imagine. We've included them though in our wines already. You know, if you look up here, we have a bottle. It probably broke in the earthquake. I don't see it up there. Oh, there it is. It got moved. That's all. This white blend we call prestidigitation that my daughter did that label. I think that was done when she was about 3, actually, that colorful label there. Cool. And it gets a lot of compliments.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not seeing that one either. Things get moved around. And again, with the earthquake, we did a lot of moving things around.
I bet you did.
Still reorienting myself. We make a port style wine called Ruby Fabulosa, which is what we call my younger daughter, Ruby Fabulosa. And it's a Ruby port, so we named it after her.
Cool.
And it's cute and it's sweet, like she is.
That's another cool thing to do in the wine business, is to be able to sort of, whether they work on it or not, give them a little bit of a tribute. It kind of makes you stick your chest out a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's talk about the earthquake briefly.
All right.
Just how you fared, because being down at this end of the valley, you were one of the wineries that was closest to it.
We were quite close, however, far enough away, close yet far, and being on the east side, apparently we're on a little more solid ground. The quake started south and a little bit to the west, and the west apparently gets a little more liquidy when the world shakes, but over here things were pretty solid. You know, I was woken up terrified and in the pitch dark because the power went out, and you know, by the time we got everybody gathered and stepping over all of the debris and broken glass and furniture strewn about our house, which took several days to clean up. That was frightening in and of itself, just seeing how much just came down.
Yeah.
We got into the car, parked it across the street so we could, so it was in a safe place where nothing would fall in it. And that way we could listen to the radio and plug in our phones to charge up for emergency. But the quickest form of news these days is you get on Facebook.
Yeah.
And you see what's happening, because the news had barely even picked it up, the radio news, that there had been an earthquake.
Oh, that's funny.
Our local station, within the hour they were on, which was much to their credit. I mean, people came in like you know, 3:30 in the morning, they were running to the station to get on the air. But the San Francisco stations didn't really figure out anything had really happened until much later. But anyway, on Facebook, I'm already seeing pictures. This is, you know, 4 a.m., and I'm already seeing pictures of barrels strewn about and wine flooding cellars. And in my brain, I'm thinking, oh, geez, this is going to be horrible. So when it got light, about 6 a.m., came down here to the winery, and you can see right behind you, there is this wall of bottles with labels of our custom clients. So these are all wines we make for other people. Mm. And tell me how secure those bottles look to you, Ray.
They don't. They look like they could fall off as...
They're just resting on a shelf, right. Nothing. Yeah. Two of them fell off, one of them broke.
Unbelievable.
That's it.
Wow.
That's it.
I'm looking at probably about 300 bottles, give or take?
There's a lot of bottles.
Yeah.
And two fell, one broke. Now, right here on this side table next to our main tasting table where we keep the wines, several of those bottles did fall off and break on the floor full of wine. And then we also are famous for this barbecue sauce that we pair with our Zinfandel and we let people taste. It's a great, fun pairing.
Oh, yeah.
But a few bottles of those broke. So we had wine and barbecue sauce.
Not quite the pairing you might recommend.
Do you know what, though? I came in, started cleaning up. It was a big mess. It smelled so good. Lunch?
Yeah, exactly.
Delicious.
Why am I so hungry while I'm doing this?
Yeah, but that was really it here at the winery. Nothing else happened.
Good.
We did lose some case goods at our warehouse, which was closer to the epicenter, but luckily, again, not a disastrous amount.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. More importantly, luckily nobody was hurt because
Thank goodness. Right. Nobody around here was hurt. It was just terrifying experience to go through.
I've
never felt anything. You know, I've grown up in California. I've been through some earthquakes before, but wow, nothing like that. Yeah. Nothing that's actually rocketed me out of bed and I've woken up screaming, which I honestly did. By the time we opened that day, I got here about 6 o'clock, started cleaning up. I left about 11 after renting the rug doctor and getting the wine stain. Luckily, the one store open, Home Depot, much to their credit, it's the one place I could find open where I could get something. They weren't ruined, but you know, a bunch of places were still in tatters. Anyhow, not to give them a plug, but I was able to get in and clean up. But by 11 o'clock, we were packed. It was like as busy as I've ever seen it here. And I just imagine that... folks were in town. They're still going to go out and have their fun. And I stopped to say hi to some people sitting out on our beautiful tasting terrace here at Judd's Hill.
It's just right behind us, if you take a look.
Our elegantly appointed desert landscape, tasting terrace, new. Come experience it. Mm. They were visiting from Alabama. And I said, you know, welcome. This is just vacation. And I said, yeah, it's a vacation. We just came from San Francisco and we walked across the Golden Gate Bridge. We went to Alcatraz. And I said, and you guys felt it this morning? Like, oh, yeah, you know, that was something else. I said, look at you guys. People come every day from around the world to visit California. And you did it. You went on the Golden Gate Bridge. And you went down Lombard Street and on the cable car. And now you've come to Napa Valley and you're tasting wine. And... lucky you, how many people get to say that they got to experience an honest, genuine, real live California earthquake? And they kind of looked at each other and laughed and said, yeah, I guess you're right, we are lucky. They weren't feeling so lucky that morning.
Yeah.
I always like to look on the positive side.
And once is good.
Once never is fine, again. Especially one like that. That was just, that was violent.
2014. You're just wrapped up. As you say, your harvest. How are you feeling about this vintage?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that, but I've, you know, I forget who I first heard it from. It was a vineyard manager, I'm sure of that, but who was it? I don't know, but it's a great quote. I overheard somebody ask him, hey, how was this year for you? He said, perfect, just like last year, different. Because every year is different. I mean, that's what makes, I think, winemaking eternally intriguing to people. You know, they're always... interested in it. Because every year is going to be different. And whether I don't believe in good years and bad years. I just don't. I don't think there's such a thing. Mm-hmm. There's different years. And as winemakers, we have to be able to work with what we get. It sounds simple to say. It's not simple to do. But the philosophy is as simple as that. So I don't believe in good years and bad years. This year, I'm going to say it's good. I think every year is good. We're in the midst of a drought. We haven't had rain or cold weather in a long, long time. As we sit here, it looks like it's threatening to spit a little rain on us, which is kind of nice. That'd be great. But for grapes, that ain't such a bad thing.
Right.
They like long, warm, dry growing seasons. So guess what? Drought year 2014, I think it's going to be stellar for wine. We got good crops. We were worried about the yields being low. Not at all. Weren't sure about the quality. You know, we're going to get raisins and, you know, desiccated fruit. Like, not at all. What can I say? I mean, high hopes. It's going to be delicious. It already is coming out of the press. It's still rough, of course, but I'm smiling.
So that's something for all of us wine drinkers to look forward to.
I think so. What about you? How did you get into this? I mean, you're at all the wine events. You come from Cleveland. I'm like, what got you into wine? I haven't asked you that.
Well,
how do you, is it okay if I ask you questions?
Sure. You asked me a couple. I like.
Have you talked about this already?
No, not really. You know, once in a while people will ask. I just, like anybody else, I was a beer guy. I eventually, when Kanai came out, if you remember Kanai from a million years ago, I had friends, we all drank that. And then you just evolve after a while. You're going like, this is, it was a cheap Italian wine, like a Chianti or whatever. And then evolved into, you know, the classic White Zinfandel. And after a while thinking, yeah, I don't really care for this anymore.
Right.
Get into red. And made my first trip out here in 01. And that was all she wrote.
That's all it took.
When I came up here, it was the end of it for me. I was like, this is the most beautiful part of the earth I've ever been in.
What did you do that trip? What was your experience?
What was it like, or what?
Yeah, what was your experience on the first trip? Like, what sucked you in besides it being beautiful, looking around? Like, what got you really?
I think mostly the people. The people were extraordinary. You know, everybody was so friendly, so nice, so happy. And we're not talking about drunk happy. We're just talking about, you know, we live in the most beautiful place on earth. And, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to look behind the curtain, as I said.
Yeah.
And it just was really, it was quite. I think the hospitality is so exceptional.
Hmm.
I mean, I can't think of any bad experiences, certainly not on that first trip. And if I look back of 14 years of going back now, coming back out here, I can name only one genuinely bad experience. And beyond that, it was a silly one. But beyond that, I mean, it's talking to people and about themselves, what they do. Yeah, that's it. And I sincerely love wine. I've learned so much. I love to learn. I've had the opportunity to work at two wineries briefly for a week. And,
oh, you have?
Yeah, I worked at Alpha Omega in 09, and Goldeneye in 11.
Oh, cool,
Anderson
cool.
Valley. And Anderson Valley was a second falling in love.
Right.
A far more wild and, you know,
the wild west of winemaking up there, right?
Yeah, what a, like, it was like 1,000 people living in Philo, you know, mm-hmm. and down up the road. Navarro had, I think, 87 on their sign. So small town, small town. Yeah, that's my, basically in a nutshell. And some years ago, because I'm an audio guy, my passion is audio.
Mm-hmm.
Audio is what I'm about. I've owned this business for 17 years. So I thought, wow, let's marry these two together.
That makes a lot of sense. I was just curious because, you know, a lot of people come here every single day from, as I said, all over the world and fall in love with Napa Valley, but not all of them take it to the level that you have where you kind of dedicate a part of yourself to meeting the people, talking to the people, getting their stories out there and, you know, doing the research and just being a part of it, like really inserting yourself and becoming part of the whole scene.
Well, this is coming home for me now. When I come into town, I feel like I'm coming home. But an interesting point, occasionally, I'll hear people when they come out here saying, well, you know, I'm going to go to Napa or I'm going to go to somewhere else because, you know, it's too glitzy. It's too shiny. It's too glamorous. And I go, well, I'll tell you what. Let me recommend you come see certain people and see if you can actually see them themselves or spend a little time in the tasting room. And I'll show you places that are anything but glamorous. And maybe with luck, you'll get to see the cellar and see how glamorous that is. And you start realizing Napa Valley is a farmland that has grown very quickly and has produced some of the most amazing fruit in the world. And these are real people operating it. Yeah, there's glitz, there's glamour, to be sure. That's 5% at most. In fact, that's probably a high number of this valley. What I know are people like you who are friendly, who always make me welcome. And down the list, Garen Staglin. You know, this guy has got this very expensive wine, and he's always been very nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then plenty of people in between. Amy Aiken at Meander, who was, you know, go down the list. It's real people. You just need to take the time. Yeah, there's Dariush in this wonderful, beautiful place. I think that's actually kind of cool. You know, I like going into something like that because it looks like you've just left the planet all of a sudden.
Yeah, there's definitely, as I say, something for everyone here in Napa Valley, whatever your thing is. And yeah, I think the glitzy, glamorous stuff gets the most press because it's glitzy and glamorous. And that's what press picks up on, you know, like the events like Auction Napa Valley or the whatnot that showcased that side of Napa Valley. But as you said, pulling back the curtain, it's just real folks making wine.
You're the prime example.
Farmers and winemakers is doing our thing.
Yeah, and you're coming in and you're tired.
Exhausted.
Well, that's true. You're working a lot of hours. As people who both own businesses, we know what that's like. I respect that. I think that's part of it, too, for me. And again, because of the NVV having, I believe, 85%, give or take, all family-owned businesses, that means a lot to me. I like the idea of a family-owned business. I've never had one, but there's so many aspects of it. So to answer your question, that's why I'm drawn to it. And I like Sonoma a lot, too. There's a lot of wineries I'm close to that I like over there. But Napa has made me and my niece, Jeanette, so welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very sincere. I don't feel any phoniness at all.
You guys have become fixtures. I mean, I expect to see you at all of the big events. And I'm always impressed that you come out here from back east. You call that back east?
Or
Midwest.
Well, I live in Milwaukee, so that would be...
Oh, Milwaukee. Why do I think Cleveland?
Because I'm from Cleveland.
Because we talked about being Cleveland. Right, okay.
Proud Clevelander, yes.
Oh, I was going to ask you to edit that out earlier that I said Cleveland. It's true. No. Okay, Milwaukee. That's where you are now.
I was actually impressed you do that. I was startled you do that. Yeah.
Okay. Where are we going with that?
For me, how can you not?
Oh, yeah, you become fixtures here. I mean, you make the trek out here. You cover the events. You get to know the people. I just think that's really cool.
That's the best part, getting to know the people.
And you're not an insider. It's not me. I have a radio show, weekly radio show, where I talk to people. But chances are I've known my guests, for much of my life and whatever. And it's like friends talking. And sometimes I listen back to the interview and I think, why didn't I talk about this? Because my listeners don't know this, but I just didn't ask because I already know, so it didn't even occur to me to ask. And I just think it's cool that somebody who isn't from here, it gets so intrigued by what goes on here that you make the effort to come and tell in our story. And I think we appreciate that, especially coming from an outsider. As I said, I've got my show. It's called Judd's Napa Valley Show. And I try not to make it seem like I'm an insider just boasting about how great we are here in Napa Valley. I just try to showcase the personalities of Napa Valley because there are so many characters that make this place intriguing. It's more of a personality show than anything else. But I'm just glad somebody is doing what you're doing from the outside and showcasing what we do.
And that's what it is, yeah. Thank you, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome.
I do appreciate that. But I think it's a great idea you're doing what you're doing, and not to compliment you because I need to. I think it's a cool idea to see an insider's point of view. Jeb, we were just talking about a radio show that you do, and I just want to see if there's a way online for listeners to get to your show.
Oh, yeah,
we're
sure.
We're not living here in Napa.
Thanks. So give me the plug. That's
Absolutely.
Great. It's called Judd's Napa Valley Show, because I'm just that brilliant of a marketer to come up with a title like that. It airs live Tuesday mornings locally on KVON 1440 here in Napa, but you can go to kvon.com and stream it, or you can go to the iTunes store and get it via podcast by typing in Judd's Napa Valley Show, or juddsnapavalleyshow.com has all that information, which can be found at juddshill.com, where you can find out about our winery and order wine. And I'll tell you what, for your listeners, I've got a deal, such a deal. I do this for my listeners on the show, for the podcast. I say, look at our website at juddshill.com, find out about the winery, the family, the wines, see our funny videos, because my degree was in TV production since I wasn't interested in wine at first. So we make all these quirky videos I think people would enjoy. They're there at juddshill.com. But if you put some wine in your shopping cart, type in lowercase letters, JNVS, Judd's Napa Valley Show, 15% off your entire wine order. How about that?
Woo-hoo. Not a bad deal, folks. I highly recommend it.
And then, of course, if you join the wine club, also available online, it's free to join. You get a better deal than that. But anyway, I won't go in on it.
Very cool.
I won't get too commercial here.
One last question, I'll let you go.
Yeah.
For the winery here for tastings, should people be calling in advance by reservation, or can they just wander in?
It helps. Call. We're open daily by appointment. We love to see it. Whether you're dropping in, we'll make an appointment for you at our earliest convenience. But we'd love to know if you're coming, because as you can see here, Ray, we're pretty small. And I think that people like that about us,
yes.
But it means we don't have like this huge hospitality staff. So if we know you're coming, we can properly prepare to show you a good time. And we do guarantee a good time.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Judd, this was great. I totally do. I love talking to you.
Totally fun. Always good seeing you.
Good seeing you. Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Right on. Thanks, Ray.
To learn more, visit juddshill.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our intern is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2014.